Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the program, Mission Room Match, Friday Night at the Fights. It is October 27, 2023. It's about 8:35 in the evening, Eastern Standard Time. We're broadcasting live from Youngsville, North Carolina. My name is Danny Venna. I'm sitting in as host tonight. Dial in by 563-999-3090. Let me give you that number again. That's 563-999-3090. I see we already have some callers on the switchboard. Thank you for calling in. And that tonight, you know, it's a joy to be here because Friday Night at the Fights has been a very successful show. You know, it's our 12th year now doing this, so it's just a very popular show. People like to call in, talk about their experiences. Some of the teachers that call in talk about working with their students. And some of the dojos have actually, they have Friday Night at the Fights at their dojo now because they listen to the show and they have so much fun. Sometimes they even put us on while the class is going on. You know, they actually broadcast the show and they say, listening to what we're talking about and, you know, based on what they're working on in the dojo, it's almost like, it sort of syncs up where, you know, some of our guests will call in and talk about when we're doing our calisthenics, how the, you know, the sound of the room, what the sound of the room is like. What are you focused on while you're, you know, doing your jumping jacks or your sit-ups or your leg lifts or, you know, whatever. But whatever you're working on. And then, of course, once everybody's nice and warmed up, we start to go into the basic exercises, chart one. You know, these things, these inherent things to the class, such as, I don't know how you build your classes out there, like, you know, but a formal class basically is the bow in, you do your calisthenics, you go into chart one, you work chart two, you do your combinations, Ippon Kumite, you do your Ju Kumite, you work on your empty hand kata, and then for the students that are working weapons, they work on their weapons and you bow out. So there's usually a question and answer session, you know, before you bow out, but that's the basic class. Now, we only have a certain amount of time per class, so it could be that one of the question and answers at the end of the class, someone may ask, well, on the next class, is there any way we can spend a little more time working on this or working on that, whatever? So classes are made to have a structure, of course, but when you have to flex that structure, availability has to be there. You have to be able to accommodate those things that the students require, whether it's doing reps or whether it's explaining the bunkai, getting the footwork, getting the timing, the distance, all of those things worked out so that when they do put the combinations together, it flows and it's natural. There's no resistance. So, again, when we talk about these things, a lot of times, works. But thanks for joining us. Who is that? That's Michael. Anyway, the idea of bringing together a group of people into the dojo on a regular basis. You know, every dojo has their own schedule as to when it's, you know, when you'll be working out there. But more importantly, the consistency of that schedule. You know, that's the key to going and working with your dojo mates, obviously. But then when you leave, I don't want to use the word obligated, but you're sort of responsible, let me put it that way, for carrying on until the next lesson. What do I mean by that? Well, we have the Kenpo Gokui, and in those writings, if you exercise those writings in your daily life, for instance, Sanshin breathing, over the years, using breath to control everything. It's like the gas to the car. If you don't have gas in your car, it won't move. It doesn't have the adrenaline that we have. But when we release that adrenaline in us, that's like our gas, man. It's what, you know, again, the breath, when you breathe, your body requires oxygen to do the things that are necessary when you're frightened, when you've been surprised, when you've been attacked, when you've been put in a situation where you have to fight for your life. One of the reasons why we do basics, let's face it, the things that you do the most, that you practice the most, over time will become natural to you because you've been doing it for so long. It is what Advincula Sensei tells us, that at his age now, he doesn't fight anymore, but he does the kata and fights within the kata. You understand? When he has an opponent, they work out together inside the kata. That's how they fight now at Sensei's age. So this is, again, a great dividend because as you get older, this keeps the brain constantly working and trying to recall and remember all of the assignments. So it's very good exercise for the brain. Not to say what great exercise it is for the rest of the body, but let's face it, if the brain is healthy, then, you know, the body will follow suit. That is, you know, the hope. Anyway, but as you get older, you realize that the wealth of knowledge that was taught to you by the pioneers, the people that have come before you, I mean, that knowledge has a value to it. And, you know, as we're told, knowledge is power. So when you go into the dojo and you do your, like tonight is a night that you, when you come to the dojo, you know, we put on our gear and we go to it. For whatever time we're going to give the dojo tonight, we're going to give it doing this. And we're gonna do Jukumite. It's Friday night at the fight, so everybody comes to the dojo ready to, you know, do battle, if you will, and display their skills amongst their dojo mates. And then when we have the other schools come in, the other dojos that come to visit, a lot of times what happens, again, it's one of the things that you can, if let's say you're at an age where you can't do the Jukumite anymore, where you can break off to the side and pull out any one of the empty hand katas or any one of the kabuto katas and go out there and work out. So there's the longevity of the art. The art evolves within itself because you use it in different ways as you evolve and get older. Now, I find that to be an amazing science because the way my sensei explained it to me is if you practice, let's say, 10,000 hours, all right, in 10,000 hours, you will have learned what you practiced, you know, what you were taught, how you practiced it, and what happened in those 10,000 hours. What did you actually extract from what you learned? How do you apply what you learned in real time? Just like at work. They give you an ASTM specification to go test concrete or let's say asphalt, rebar steel, so on and so forth. They give you an ASTM standard. And then you have the specification to guide you through your inspection. Well, it's the same thing here. That's why I mentioned the Kenpo Gokui, because if you apply that writing into your daily life and into your practice and into your being, I guess, but it's the best way for me to describe it, you wind up becoming your goals, because that way of life helps you achieve your goals. One is, if you choose to be a martial artist, you have to be in shape. You have to be able to go out on the deck for several hours and, you know, run around like a kid, basically. I find this to be very interesting because karate has stretched my, I'll say life inspecting. I made it to what I consider to be old. You know what I mean? When I was a kid, 65 years old was, you know, an old man, an elder. So karate has brought a lot of injury to my body. I won't say I haven't been injured. I healed well. I have some scars from it, stuff that will never go away. I guess between, well, this is the balance for me, between the injuries and the toll that it's taken on my body, the mind has gotten to a point where it won't take no for an answer. You see, I work in construction, so if you take days off in construction, you're probably not going to have your job very long. You know what I mean? In construction, you got to go to work every day, no matter what. And some days in over my practice, I just could not walk. You know, I guess I overdid it, whatever, but I just could not walk. I used a cane, I used crutches, I went to work. I went to work. I wouldn't. My mind forced my body to do it. Now, of course, when my boss saw I was walking with a cane, he said, "What's wrong?" I said, "Well, my legs. I don't know what attacked my knees and my feet." We checked for gout. We checked for this. We checked for everything. It turned out that when the COVID was happening and all this stuff, I don't know. I cannot put my finger on it, nor could my doctor, other than I got a form of it. But still to this day, I don't know what happened, because I, like I said, I never take days off from work, but whatever hit my knees and my feet, it was so painful. But because I've been hurt way past that in martial arts, I mean, where, you know, I went to work some days where my boss said to me, you better post, you know, sunglasses on. What the hell happened to you? Were you in a wreck or something? Yeah, I had to fight Jack Jameson. Frank Kloss, John Bingero, you know, these guys were no joke. They had no problem popping you off and you know, taking knees, son. So yeah. I have seen the effects of, if not for the basics, chart one, chart two, and the combinations, working them with a partner, I believe keeps you fresh, fluent. You know, your flinch response is still quick. You know what I mean? Even at my age now, I can still, you know, do my basics. One is because you know them so well. It's like you can taste them. You know what I mean? It's almost like a food. And then when you do work your combinations, you know, it's upon kumite. So it's basically controlled, if you will. So you can exercise, you know, and get your work in. And then when you do the jukumite, that's where the injuries come. You know, it's freestyle fighting. So you're out there and you're trying to learn your craft, you know, and your timing and your distance, your delivery. Again, that's why I love the basics. When you fight, doing things efficiently and quickly, usually you'll get a successful or a positive result, usually, because it's well targeted, distance and timing. So I believe that. I believe that at the end of the day, if you practice that distance and timing, even in your kata, even when you're doing your Endian kata or your Kabuto katas, it's all there. So when you apply that in real time, whether you're doing your practice or with a partner, again, it's from the mind down. Your mind has to work. Your physical being has to work. So it's great exercise. Now, listen, when you work out for several hours and you're heart's pumping and you're doing your work, when you're done and you go for that shower and you now relax, well, you want to talk about de-stressing and letting all of the life's pressures out for a couple of hours so that you can practice and practice well. I've spent my life doing that rather than, you know, one of the reasons why I started taking martial arts was to get away from trouble. My mom didn't like me getting in trouble. So we spent time looking for things, and I say we, my mother and I, spent time looking for things that would keep me busy and safe. What do I mean by that? Again, we go back to when preteen, so like, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old, I wanted to play baseball. My big thing was I come from New York City, You know, I had the Yankees and the Mets, and I wanted to play baseball. So in my town, where I lived in Lindenhurst, we had the LLCFL. That was for football, and we had the Little League, which was really a lot of fun because it started at T-ball up, you know. So by the time I got out here from living in New York City, my fourth grade was at William Rawl. They had a baseball program, and I signed up for it. You know, I wanted to play baseball. So from very young, I wanted to do sports, but you know, when you're getting picked on at school and you can't really defend yourself properly, it gets heavy. So with that comes another search between my mother and I, and we found Mr. McGrath. And ever since that day, when I first saw a dojo, or I didn't even know the word dojo. If anything, it was like an auditorium to me, because that's what it was, the Lindenhurst Youth Center. There was a stage and a big wooden floor, and it was like, you know, you could sit chairs down and whatnot, but when there was no chairs, it was a big room, a very big room. That's why I thought it was an auditorium. But they converted it to a youth center. They had pool tables upstairs and so on and so forth, darts, stuff for us to play. It was a place for us to go on John Street. And there was an ad in the paper, in the South Bay paper. And it was Mr. Lassiri and Mr. McGrath, you know, ran that dojo there. And that's how it started for me. My father, you know, wanted to show me how to box. And he did, you know, he did. Gave me some very good pointers. But I needed to get away from that. I didn't want to box. I didn't want to fight. And that's why I took martial arts, because martial arts is not for fighting. It's not. It has it's quite the opposite. I know that may sound strange, but it's quite the opposite. Give us your thoughts. Call in 563-999-3090. You know, I often wonder what would have happened if I didn't take martial arts in my life. What would happen to me? I spent all my time with my buddies that we studied Ishinru together with, in my mom's backyard, in their mom's backyard, down at the park when we played handball, all this stuff. So it became, again, those basics. What are you going to work on? Well, let's learn the basics. What are you going to work on? Well, let's learn the basics. Let's always learn the basics. That's what Sensei told, you know, every class. Got to learn the basics. Got to spend time. Repetition. You have to do it over and over and over again to really learn them and learn how to execute them well without hurting yourself. You know, what do I mean by that? If you punch the bag and you don't punch the bag properly, you're going to sprain your wrist or you're going to hurt something. You have to learn how to hit so that you don't get hurt. You know what I mean? There's an art to it. You just don't, you know, swing wildly and think you're not going to get hurt. You will. You will. Especially when you're under duress and you've been frightened and surprised. Control. That's why the breath is, it's If you watch some of the greatest singers in the world, Andrea Bocelli, listen to him sing and how he can hold his breath, well, not hold his breath, but hold a note over, you know, like 60 bars. It's unheard of. But yet he does it with ease because he knows how to control his breath. It's a powerful thing. And in the Kenpo Gokui, it's made reference to in almost every comment, because without the breath, you know, the opportunity to strike is when it presents itself. You won't be ready. One of the components will be missing. And you can't have that. And that's why we practice. We practice so that a trained eye can come over to you and say, listen, this is what you got to do. And a lot of times what it refers to is ownership. You have to own what you're doing. When you watch a good fighter do a setup and then a spinning back kick and knock the fighter off his feet, down, I mean, no response, boom, you realize how vulnerable you can be out there if you don't practice properly. That kick hits you in a vital area, you know, you could lose your life. Now, obviously, the person throwing it, you would only hope to God that they're not just wildly throwing the kick, which I see a lot of. Now, who am I to talk? Well, the target that they hit. It's one thing to kick somebody, and then it's another thing to kill somebody. All right? So, again, that's why we practice. And you can use a pad so that the person, you know, has to throw the kick and hit the pad. And then that height varies, and those targets vary. Can you hit them by spinning that head around and letting that kick go? Get a look first. That's all. Or you have to have a perception of where that kick's going to go and where that person's going to be when it lands. Your brain does that math automatically. But depending on what kind of fighter you are is where that kick's going to land. So practice. You know, for us, it's practice. It's all about how do you stop? No. I shouldn't say stop. How do you evade and protect against a kick like that? Especially from a skilled fighter who's been doing it for years and years and years. That's why bag work to me is so essential. You can move your target on the bag. You know what I mean? You can actually see where your foot hit the bag. So, without the basics, difficult techniques. I said that wrong. They're not difficult. The well-practiced techniques get in because, you know, your practice is not exactly where it has to be. Whenever I get beat up in a fight, the first thing I ask myself is, what did you do wrong? Did you drop that hand? Did you drop that hand and he got the back fist in on the cheekbone? Is that what happened? Well, who's our best critic? And that's ourself. When it comes to fighting, you can't lie to yourself. You have to tell yourself, you got to keep your hands up, man. This guy's quick. He's looking for you to drop that hand. And as soon as he sees that hand start to go down, boom, he hits you. So, basics, man. You know, basics are, if you're going to practice anything, practice the basics. Because they're made for you to use and utilize. More importantly, I will say this, they're also used for your ease of access. Because they're basic movements, they're very easy to access. And because you do them the most, inherently, you know them pretty well. So, Sensei McGrath called it the KISS principle. Keep it simple, stupid. Now, he didn't mean to offend me by that, but knowing how I fight, the basics are, again, they're very simple for me to access. Doesn't take much to, you know, really use them in a way that you can protect yourself and be very, very highly effective. And then in the katas, there's the Sun Tzu kata that was given to us by our founder has some movements in it that are inherently deadly, but well practiced. The body learns to adjust. Again, as you get older, your body learns to adjust to these movements and how you use them seamlessly, like flawlessly. There's no delay, really. Because you've been doing them for so long, and as you evolve, you know, as we get older, we get a little slower, we get a little this, we get a little that, aches and pains, whatever. You're not as efficient as you were, let's say, 40 or 50 years ago. But you still have, you know, that, you still have those means and methods in you because you've practiced it so long, you know? So again, when you go into dojo and Sensei bows you in, you warm up and you do your chart one. One is, you know, you're actually doing something that the founder and the students of the day made for us. They gave us these gems to practice. Now, they didn't just arbitrarily say this, that, or the third. They actually put some thought into it, you know, and let's show them how to do a punch. Let's show them how to do a block and a punch. And let's see how they evolve from that, these movements and these principles and concepts. All right? Well, once you get those, and you've been doing it, let's say now 6 months, maybe a year, you're getting now, you know, your repertoire of your charts, and you're learning your kicks, you're learning your combos, you're starting to, you know, really get ready to get out on the deck and go fight, you know, and try these things that they just taught you. They taught you a punch. They taught you a block. So use those two things. They taught you some kicks. Use those couple of things. Try them out. It's all about distance and timing, really, no matter what technique you use. So what are you really practicing? It's the distance and timing of what piece of waza that you're working. That's basically what it is. I mean, I can't say it any better than that. What do you think? Call into the show, 563-999-3090. We're almost at halftime. You know, we'll build a round table and see, what do you do? My sensei cut it up in a circle. First, he made it very simple. Very simple. Made two lines. North, south, east, west. Here you go. You got four pieces of the circle now. You should be standing, let's say, with your left foot out in front, which would be quadrant one, and your right foot in back of you in Seisan stance in quadrant four. So you're occupying one and four. So, you know, you have to understand that you're in the center of those four quadrants, but your feet are in, if you said one, two, three, four, you know, and you went around the circle that way, quadrant one, your left foot would be in, quadrant two would be empty, quadrant three would be empty, and quadrant four would have your right foot. So now that you understand that basic math, knowing that your body is dead center and that circle is around you, it is that bubble, really, that you have to, what we call, evade and protect. You can't let anything go in that distance. If you got to roll out, man. I don't care what you got to do, but nobody ever blocked the roll. So if you can't do what you got to do to protect that circle that's around you, well, I guess that's why we call it practice. What do you want me to say? The only answer I could give that is you have to practice how to protect yourself with that math around you. Because if you measured it, it's math. No matter how tall you are, how short you are, when you have your 2 feet on the ground, there's a area around you that, you know, when people break that plane, you know, they're close enough to touch you. And when they're close enough to touch you, again, I'll say that's why we practice. We practice to evade and protect that area. We know the math that if a punch is coming, we almost can almost, before the punch even leaves, we can almost do the math quickly and put our feet where they belong to evade and protect. So we don't move our feet. Yes, moving your body and, you know, doing the, what my, you know, dad was trying to teach me in boxing is when someone throws a jab, you move your head back and let them overextend, and that's when you come, you know, with your attack, because now they're extended. So the jab is very effective if you know how to use it. But if you've practiced well, someone with a good jab should never really even hit you, because you just know that distance in boxing. You know what I mean? So if you constantly get hit with a jab, you need to learn how to evade and protect, because that person has your distance and timing down. You know exactly where you're going to step, boom, they hit you. That's what my sensei tried to teach me. He used to tell me, when you switch your stances, Seisan, Seiyuchin, you use different stances when you're being attacked, when the other fight is pressing you. When you pick up your foot and move, the time that it takes to pick up your foot and move, sensei used to tell me, that's my time to hit you. Because you're moving. Whether you're still or moving, when you go to do something, you move your feet. Well, when you move your feet, sensei was very astute at that. He used to watch your footwork, and he would time it. He's going to pick up that foot, go, boom. So as soon as you go to pick up that foot, you are vulnerable because you were trying to do something. Whether it's a block, whether it's a punch, whether it's a kick, whether it's this, whether it's that, it doesn't matter. You were trying to do something. Even if it's a simple step, you're still trying to step. It was his job to hit you in that small interval of time. I asked Albert Mady Sensei one day, what was it about these guys, Sensei, that, you know, made them so fast or this or that? And he says, well, you know, It's not really all about that. What it's about is their understanding of what you're doing and they just inherently know because they're so good at it where your weaknesses are. So they attack your weaknesses. This guy, when he steps to the right, drops his left hand. So they see that. So they force you to step, let's say, with your right foot moving backward. Well, when you take your right foot and you pick it up to, you know, take a step backward, you drop your right hand. Well, that's how they know. It's not about them being quick. It's about them being smart. Now, yes, they were athletic and they were well-trained and they were in the Marine Corps, the best shape of their life, all this stuff. We get it. But inherently, they learned the basics. They learned to do their drills, their Ippon Kumite drills, and they learned the timing. It's invaluable, folks. I call the katas encyclopedias for a reason. There's knowledge in there. What are you willing to extract? That's the key. When you read a book, one of the things you have to do is comprehend what you're reading so you can understand what the book is about. So that's why I call them encyclopedias, because doing a kata is like doing your reading. It's the same thing, really. You're going to read a bunch of words, and at the end of all those words, you're going to make, a call on what you just read. What was that about? Well, I find that to be very beneficial because I learned the basics, and I just love them so much that, again, it's like food to me. It's what keeps them, the body, I use the word fluent, it just does. When you do your basics, just like when I work out with the students or the black belts, you do your work, you see everybody's skill level, obviously, but intent. If you're around it long enough, you can almost close your eyes and hear the ones that have the intent. That they manage to display in their talent and in their means and methods that they got it. They got it. You can hear it. You can actually hear it. And then you can see the effects of it when they fight other students. They're just like a wet rag. No resistance. You drop a wet rag on the floor, the water comes out of it. It's just nothing. No resistance. Back in my day, we had a fighter. His name was Luis Delgado. And, Hanchi made a name for himself because he was a great fighter. He had great distance and timing, He wasn't an Ishin Ryu practitioner, but he was a great fighter back then. He really took the martial arts to... And back in the, 60s, 70s, and 80s, he took the martial arts to just, I like to use the word perfection in his case. He was perfect. He was a perfect specimen of martial arts, man. He was really sharp, really well-rounded. Could really fight with the best of them. He was not afraid in the least. He had no pretense about him. It was all business. He's very respectful, very nice. When you bowed in, Wow, what a fighter. And we had him in our dojo, you know. Ed McGrath School was known as a fighting school. We had people like Malachi Lee. I mean, he was a martial arts giant, Malachi. And he was a martial arts giant. I don't mean because he was tall. He had a big heart. He loved sensei and had a big heart. There's so many of them. Richie Bell, Joe Burgess. There's just so many of them. You know, there's so many people that I've crossed paths with that are just in awe of how these people understand what sensei taught them. So, you know, they're very smart. You know, most of them are very, very smart people. I mean, we had a guy, it's funny, his name was John Dombrowski. Just because of his name, you know, he had a tough time, but he was just, the word grit comes to mind. He just was grit, John Dombrowski. He wasn't sensei's best fighter by any means, but he was just, you know, he'd come back for more no matter what, man. He's just a man on a mission. And he fought some guys that were like, I mean, just incredible fighters. Sensei, you know, had some students in his dojo that were really, really incredible fighters. Guys that were very, very well-trained, well-practiced. Sensei beat the hell out of these guys. So they were tough, you know. There's so many of them. I can't go on to tell you how, as a little guy, I would see these guys come and do their martial arts. I could not believe that the body could do that stuff. And they did it like it was jumping around. I mean, it was nonchalant. Like it had no resistance to it. And the power, you know, that you could see the effects of the power that they displayed. It was unbelievable. And where did they come from when you would talk to them? Why, you know, what do you work on? I work on the basics. When I do my workout at home, I work on the basics. All sensei's black belt, you always talk to them and say, oh, yeah, when I do my workout, I start with my basics. That's where it's at. You know, when you do your homework and you look at, especially now with all the tools that you guys have, YouTube, all this stuff, you can see that the basics, especially the films and the videos that they share of the first generation students, it's all about the basics. You know, it's all about how they practice the basics. And then they use the makiwara to, you know, distance, timing, conditioning, all this stuff. It's really, I tell you what, man, the more and more you get into martial arts, the more and more you realize just what dividends it pays as you get older. Because now you can look at the time and sort of, in my case, break it out like in decades. And look at each decade. And now that I'm in my 60s, I don't know where I'd be without martial arts. One of the things we love to do to warm up is jump rope. Now, it could be because in the city where I'm from, you know, we used to have the jump rope. Everybody on the block would get involved and then after jump rope, we'd have our ice cream. Mr. Softy would come have our ice cream on a nice hot summer night. So jump rope was something that we did even as children, before I even knew about martial arts. Where I first saw people jump rope, to be honest with you, was a boxing match. When we used to go, when we were kids, the Friday night at the Bites, actually, to the Golden Gloves. I watched them jump rope. And I asked my father, Dad, you know, what are they doing there? He says, that's called jumping rope. I said, I want to learn that. That looks like it's a lot of fun. You seen him cross it up and that choo, 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 choo. I want to learn that timing. So he went and got me a jump rope. And I learned how to jump rope at a very early age. And now that I've been doing it, it's like so much fun. It's almost like playing the drums. I like to play the drums too. So I like to keep a beat, you know. So the jump rope, the sound of the rope hitting the floor and, you know, going through the air and the breathing that you do, that routine, believe it or not, helps me last when I'm out doing the Yipan Kumi days and the Juke Kumi days and I need a lot of energy. That conditioning of jumping rope and playing handball my whole life has allowed me to condition my body in such a way that at my age, I don't drop dead of, you know, a freaking heart attack out there with these kids. So I'll tell you what, there's a simple little thing. Now, really, jump rope or jumping rope has nothing to do with martial arts or boxing or this or that. It's just something that if you wish to do, learn it. It's a great thing to do, what do they call it, aerobics. It's very aerobic when you do your jump rope. It's like bag work. Bag work's very aerobic. You know, you get your heart pumping, you're moving your feet, you're punching, you're kicking, your knee and your elbow and your head button, whatever you got to do against this bag to practice your techniques, you're doing. Well, that's that. The result of that, that's why jump roping is very good because, you know, you jump rope for a minute and stop. Most people, if they could make a minute, it'd be out of breath. After a minute. So now imagine jumping rope for 15 minutes. Just sitting there and it's like a beat, you know? Breathing. Using these techniques to help you get through a workout. Let's face it, my sensei, you know, served in the Marine Corps. You had to be in shape with sensei. He ran his class where, you know, you were gassed. If you weren't in shape, you were gassed after the first basic. He still got 15 more to go. Now, we added one. I know it's chart one is 15, but we added one for Sensei Nagel. So we do 16. Our chart one, you know, consists of 16. But anyway, nevertheless, you still got 15 more basics to do. You know what I mean? And you're gassed after the first set. So you better get out there and jump rope. You better lift your weights. You better do a little running. For me, I didn't do a lot of running. I played handball. And there's a lot of starting and stopping in handball. So, you know, the calf muscles, those hammies. Those hamstrings, yeah. You work those, and you work those for longevity. And let me tell you, when whatever attacked my legs, I went to the doctors, I got shots in my legs, all that stuff. You know what it was? All those years of handball, my knees healed. They healed. I can get in the catcher's crouch and get up without any assistance. That was a big thing for me. I want to be able to, when my grandson's, you know, gets a little older, I want to be able to put on my catcher's mitt, get in the catcher's crouch, and catch. Hit the mitt, Luca. Throw it to the mitt, you know. I want to be able to do that. So I have to be able to get in the catcher's crouch, and I have to be able to get up. And when that happened to me with my knees, it scared me because I didn't know how to heal it. I didn't. I went to the doctors. I did everything I had to do. It wasn't helping. Well, you might say, well, you overused them. you know, you are getting old. You gotta, you know, be careful with your gas tank. You gotta be efficient with how you use your gas tank. Breathing, Epsom salts baths, using all kinds of natural ways to heal. When I'm really hurt, I use a tennis ball. I put the tennis ball on the floor. Wherever it hurts, I put it right on the ball. And I use the ball with a little pressure. And that ball, you know, really makes the blood in that area that's hurting me get around. And then after that, I'll use Epsom salts baths. I will. I think that over my lifetime, it's paid great dividends when I'm hurt like that. But I'll tell you what. Every injury, every tooth that ever got knocked out of my mouth, any broken nose I ever got, any broken bone that they did on me, because I didn't break anything. I just got hit so hard that it broke. It's all contributed to why, at my age, I don't take any medicine. I'm not on any kind of synthetic medicine. I don't put anything in my body that's not what my mother told me. Even at 60, in my 60s now. So I eat all the stuff that when I'm hurt, it helps me heal. It gives me the nutrients I need to replenish my cells so that they heal, you know, and give them all the positive nutrients that they need to go to that spot and heal it. So again, I'm very proud of the fact that I don't take any medicines, none. I don't take any medicine whatsoever. You know, I still drink milk. Most people say, oh, you know, milk is it. I still drink milk. I still drink it like I did when I was young. And nothing, no drink, nothing I've ever had ever quenches my thirst like a cold glass of milk. Maybe it's because I've been doing it my whole life and it's the way my body is. But it's another thing. I think my body heals from the nutrients of the milk. See, some people can't tolerate milk, but I can. My body processes milk very, very wholesomely. I get a lot of things out of milk. It's because, again, I've been doing it my whole life. When I bring home heavy cream and I whip it up and I make whipped cream with a little sugar in it and a little snap of vanilla, wow, my kids go nuts. They go nuts. It's you give them some strawberries, oh, my God. Oh, God. So, again, the basics. You know, it's all about the basics. When you do your basics and you do them well, it's like good food. Good food will keep you healthy, and doing the basics will keep you healthy. It's a winning formula. I'm living proof of it. I do my basics every day. Every day. I still throw about 1,000 kicks a day at my age. I love the bag. I love kicking the bag. It's what healed my legs. It's what healed my legs. Knee in that bag and being like, oh my God, that hurt. It dispersed that pain. I don't know. I dividends. I call them dividends. I don't know why, but that word comes out of my mouth because to me that paid a pretty big dividend. It got me where I could go back to work and walk without a cane, walk without crutches, without being in a wheelchair. Wheelchair. Oh, I said to the doctor, I play handball, doctor. What do you mean wheelchair? No, I'm not going in no wheelchair. something's wrong with me. I don't know what it is, but I'll just keep doing my basics. And somehow I'll burn it out of me. And it happened. Now, some people say, oh, well, you willed it to happen. I don't care what I did. I did my basics. I ate right. I slept right. And I healed it. Same thing with you know, other injuries that I've had. I still had to go to work. So I got to do something. Right? That's a hell of a spot to be in. Well, when you rely on something to help you because you believe in it, it works. So, all right, folks, I see we're at halftime. We got a lot of callers online. Thank you guys for calling. I appreciate that. Yeah, so call in 563-999-3090. We're going to play a song here. Let me just preface it by saying the name of it is Almost Home. It's by Greg Morgan. He sings it. And he invites Jelly Roll out to sing it with him. And it's a pretty neat story about what Craig says. So I want to play this song because we don't use the music for any other reason than to learn. The lyrics teach us something. The name of the song, you know, being Almost Home, teach us something that in martial arts, you know, where you know, we call it the home dojo or, you know, so many things that we refer to as home, as in the place where we live. That's our home, you know. So Almost Home, what we're trying to say in this song is, in martial arts, no matter how much you practice, no matter how good you get, one is there's always someone who can kick your ass, all right? But never use martial arts for anything else other than what you need it for. In your mind, your body, your spirit, what are your goals? What are you trying to achieve by learning these basics or learning these kicks? Or, well, is it just exercise? And if it is, that's beautiful. Nothing wrong with that. In my case, I wanted a little bit more than just the exercise. I wanted to learn how to exchange with other human beings. And do it at all the different levels as the Kenpo Gokui teaches us to do. So, having said that, I want to play this song. It's called Almost Home. Craig Morgan is singing, and he invites Jelly Roll out to sing with him. So, check this out.
Thank you very much. How exciting is Jelly Roll, y'all? So listen, if you haven't seen it, you need to go back and pull it up on YouTube or find his first appearance. I happened to be out on the road somewhere and someone called me and said, man, you have got to see this Jelly Roll guy. He was just on the Grand Ole Opry. And he don't look like somebody that would be on the Grand Ole Opry. But he was talking about you. And so I went back and I watched it and I watched him. He was standing up here and he was talking about how when he was in jail and struggling, how a particular song helped him get through it. And he mentioned the fact that he came to the Grand Ole Opry when he got out. And I remembered, he said, I was sitting right over there where that gentleman in that hat is sitting in the seventh row right inside. And Craig Morgan was singing on stage. And it moved me. It moved me. It just proved exactly what he said, that music can change lives. So before I do the song that he said changed his life, I would love it if y'all would give him a big round of applause and get him to come back out here and sing this with us.
Y'all make some noise for the living legend, Mr. Craig Morgan. Shortly after I got out of jail, I did. I sat right there in row 7 and I cried like a baby and watched him sing. And I remember thinking, I want to make people feel the way he makes me feel right now. This is a true testimony that God is real and all things are possible. Because that same kid that was in jail and struggling, his wife is sitting right there. He's not sitting there tonight. That kid is standing next to Craig Morton.
Here we go, buddy.
Let's do it. He had plastic bags wrapped around his shoes. He was covered in the evening news. Had a pair of old wool socks on his hands. The bank sign was flashing by below. He was freezing rain and spitting snow. He was curled up beside some garbage cans. I was afraid that he was dead. I gave him a gentle shave. When he opened up his eyes, he said, "Old man, are you okay?" And he said, "I just climbed out of a cottonwood tree. I was running from some honeybee. Tripped trying in the summer breeze. Yeah. After jumping in the calico. He said, "I was just coming around the barn. About the time you grabbed my arm, when I heard Mama holler, 'Son, hurry up.' I was close enough for my old nose to smell fresh cobbler on the stove. I saw Daddy loading up the truck. Game pulls on a tailgate. Bobbers blowing in the wind. July of 85, as cold as I've been. Yeah, I just climbed out of a cottonwood tree.
Just me and you.
I just climbed out of a cottonwood tree. I was running from some honeybee. Drip drying in the summer breeze. After jumping in the calico creek, I was walking
I was almost home. Man, I wish you
I was almost home.
Jelly Romeo.
I was almost home.
We'll be right back. hiding much too long. Don't stretch your fool's pride. Hey, love, got me on my knees, baby, begging, darling, please, baby. Darling, won't you ease my worried mind? Tried to give you consolation when your man had let you down. Like a fool, I fell in love with you. You turned my whole world upside down. Layla, got me on my knees, Layla, begging, darling, please, Layla. Darling, won't you ease my worried mind? Make the best of this situation, or I finally go insane. Please don't say never find a way. Tell me all my love's in vain. Layla, got me on my knees, Layla, begging, darling, please, Layla. Darling, won't you ease my worried mind, Layla?
I've been here for 40 years, before some of you were born, and it's the best place I've ever played. It's the best place in the world. Thank you for everything.
Chicagoland over the moonlight. And the wind howls out your name. And it feels like rain. Oh, feels like rain.
Like we're in for stormy weather.